Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
This is the RTC Weekly Download. I'm Jim Dolan, your host for this hour, just popping in to introduce the programs briefly. So we're going to listen to mostly radio. Now, today, things are a bit different from normal because these programs are not the ones we usually play. We're going to have a science fiction show called 2000 Plus. It's from 1950, and it's called The Robot Killer.
All the time that I was alone, I thought of what I would do, if only I dared. And then I saw the robot.
2000 Plus, science fiction adventures in the world of tomorrow, the years beyond 2000 A.D. 2000 Plus presents The Robot Killer.
So, you are Mr. Samuel Donaldson.
Yes, sir. Happy Sam, they call me.
Yes, I know. I have friends who think your television program is very funny. I do not.
That's a living, Professor Strager. Now, may I see the mechanical man I'm giving away as the jackpot prize on my show next week?
It is not a mechanical man, Mr. Donaldson. The correct word is robot. R-O-B-O-T.
I know.
This robot is the supreme achievement of our electronics division. We've worked on it for 6 years. We'll do whatever it is instructed to do.
I simply do not understand how the management of this corporation can think of giving it away to this public, this magnificent mechanism.
Oh, look, Professor, this corporation sponsors my TV show. We're on 1,246 stations. We're telecast in three-dimensional color. And the Happy Sam show is the number two favorite in the country. The sponsor thinks it would be a good advertising gimmick to offer a super jackpot prize, a mechanical man, a robot. And I never argue with a sponsor. Now, please, may I see what I've come to see?
All right, young man, I have no choice. Come along. There it is. Experimental robot 23.
Brother. He's really something, Professor. 6 feet tall. Shiny metal. Flexible fingers. Say, how does he work?
Very simply. His electronic controls respond to ultra-high frequency waves which emanate from this microphone box. Speak in a microphone, though. Robot will do whatever you order him to.
Anything?
Virtually. Robot 23 has an electronic brain. You try for yourself, here. Yeah.
Okay. Sing Sweet Aline.
Really, Mr. Donaldson, what a ridiculous request. Think the best scientific brains in the country work for 6 years for a robot? Heavens,
will you be mine?
It really tried to sing.
He's very clever, Professor. Hey, watch this. Pick up that broom in the corner and sweep the floor. Oh, boy, the housewives who watch my program will love this. What? I'll be darned. Look at there. He's doing it. Okay, stop sweeping. What a gadget. What a giveaway. Now, let's see, something for the kiddies, and I'll... Hey, what is that?
That kitten is the pet of Dr. Broderick of the physics laboratory, and I assure you, you cannot give that away.
I don't want to give the kitten away. I just want a little heartthrob on the show for the youngsters. Here, kitty. Come here, kitty. Kitty. Come here, kitty. now, kitty. Now, down the floor you go. Now, down the floor. Go ahead. And we'll show how gentle and friendly our jackpot prize robot is with pets. Now, give me the mic.
Mr. Donaldson, what are you going to do now?
Okay, Robot 23. Go over to the kitten. Pick it up. And pet the kitty. Nice kitty. Look at that. Isn't that sweet? Boy, what a camera shot on the air. Hey, what's he doing?
Robot 23, drop the kitten. Drop the kitten.
Drop kitten.
Oh, poor Tabby.
Why,
He killed a kitten. Broke its neck.
He tried to pet it, and he killed it. Well, you see what comes when fools play with science. No good will come of giving this robot away to the public. I warn you, no good will come of it.
Ladies and gentlemen, hello, this is Happy Sam the Happy Man, welcoming you to another half hour of mirth and melody. Boys, how about a fanfare? Thank you very much. Now, you know that every week for the past 4 weeks, our grand super jackpot has been growing and growing. At this moment, these are the sensational prizes in that jackpot. A free rocket plane trip for two to Paris, flying in the new 150-passenger luxury rocket cruiser at 60,000 feet, only 3 hours and 10 minutes from New York to Paris. A Kia atomic-powered sports roadster, the automobile that never needs gas or oil. It runs almost forever. A Krylon man suit tailored to your measure. Krylon is the wonder fabric guaranteed to last 100 years. And with this suit, a special set of 14 different Krylon chemical colors. Dip that suit in the color you prefer. Wear it, then change the color with another rinse. The suit is always pressed, always perfect. 14 suits in one. A complete wardrobe on your back. And the one thing money cannot buy, more money. Yes, $10,000 cash. Now, those are our jackpot prizes. And now, tonight, we add one more prize. A prize so fantastic and wonderful, nothing like it has ever been offered to a lucky winner before. This prize is a supreme achievement of modern science. It is an entire retinue of servants in one amazing machine. It is a slave to your every command. And here it is, Michael the Mechanical Man. Yes, a wonderful robot. Thank you very much. Thank you. And now to determine who wins this giant jackpot and who wins this mechanical marvel, Michael the Mechanical Man, 1,000 slaves in one amazing machine. Now, as you know, ladies and gentlemen, each and every one of you millions of people watching this program on your visit screens are receiving this program via microwave. And now, our computators are in action. They are channeling every microwave reception on this program. When the spinner disc stops, if your television set is on, if you're the lucky person, you win the jackpot. Wait. The computator has finished. The end air signals that the spinner disc is slowing down. And we have a winner tonight. We picked up a set who had us tuned in. Our pretty model is walking across the stage with a name. Thank you, honey. And now, here it is, the name you've all been waiting to hear. 423 North Glencoe Boulevard in Martin Hills, New York. Apartment 5B. Mr. John Hanold. Mr. John Hanold.
Down, Mr. Hanold. My practiced medical eye, judging from the smile on your face, tells me that you're pretty happy that Mrs. Hanold is being released from the hospital today.
No, it's not only that, Doctor. Don't tell me you haven't heard of my other good piece of luck. Everyone in town's been calling me for hours before I left for the hospital.
Another good piece of luck? No, I haven't heard.
Why, I won some fabulous prizes on the giveaway show, including $10,000.
Oh?
That means your bill's going to be paid. And I also got a trip to Paris and a mechanical man and Lord knows what.
That's wonderful. I congratulate you. However, I think I would forget that trip to Paris for a while.
What?
In fact, wait a few hours before telling Mrs. Hanold about your good fortune.
What, Doctor?
Mr. Hanold, after your wife's illness, she suffered a nervous breakdown. She became mentally unstable, but she's pretty good now, thanks to what the hospital has done. However, when you take her home, she must feel she's returning to her normal life. And winning $10,000 prizes isn't very normal.
Oh, I see.
The main thing we want to avoid is a relapse. Mm-hmm. She should have a few neighbors who can drop in and see her now and then.
Well, there's Miss Barton, Virginia Barton. She lives in the apartment next to us on our floor.
Oh, yes, your wife mentioned her occasionally. Do they get along all right?
I think so. Why?
Nothing, I just wondered. Well, Mrs. Hanold's waiting for you. I know you're very anxious to get her home. Nurse, have Mrs. Hanold come in, please. I think in another month or so she'll be fine. Oh, here she is now. Hello, Mrs. Hamill.
Mary, darling, am I glad to see you.
Hello, John. Hello, Doctor.
Now, what did I tell you? Doesn't she look fine?
Oh, she certainly does.
John, how good it is he going home. I'm as excited as a schoolgirl.
Well, now, don't get too excited. You've got to take it easy for a while.
Is that what the doctor says? He's such a worry bird.
You do what your husband says, Mrs. Hanold, and you'll just be fine.
See? Doctor's orders.
I promise. Thank you, Doctor. You'll be very kind.
I'll drop in from time to time to see you. Well, goodbye, Mrs. Hanold.
Goodbye, Doctor. All right, dear, let's go. Let's go.
I can hardly believe it.
Well, the doctor told me to wait until you got home before telling you.
$10,000.
And the trip to Paris. Think of it. Oh, I hope we can take it in the summer during my vacation.
And a mechanical lathe. John, where will we put it?
Now, wait, honey. You're not supposed to get excited. Oh, my boy. Who can help it?
The crazy things they give away.
Oh, I'll see who it is.
Hello, John.
Oh, hello, Virginia.
Who is it, darling?
Why, it's Virginia.
Mary, I just had to come and tell you how wonderful it is. Your being back and those wonderful prizes. It was very nice of you to come in, Virginia. And thank you for the supper you prepared for my homecoming. I was delighted to, darling. When John asked me...
John asked you to?
Well, yes, he was so happy you were coming back. But John, doesn't Mary's being home call for a celebration? Can't we have a drink?
Well, I don't know, Virginia. Mary's supposed to get rest. Still... Well, I suppose one sip won't hurt. But I'll have to go out and get something, though. I'll be right back.
Oh, darling, when you get your prizes, I'll have cause to be jealous of you.
Cigarette?
No, thanks. Jealous? Why? Well, you'll have two men. John and the robot. Poor little me, a bachelor gal all alone. You know, I really think you ought to give me one of them.
Which one would you like to have?
Darling, what a silly question. The mechanical man, of course. He doesn't drop ashes on the rugs. He'll wash the dishes and put out the cat. He'll never argue.
You're lying to me. Why, Mary, you're serious.
What did you expect me to be? I don't understand.
But I do. In the hospital, I began to understand a lot of things. I know the doctors thought something happened to my mind. But all that happened was that it became very clear, very sharp. And for the first time, I began to think clearly.
Darling, I think this excitement's been too much for you. I shouldn't have come in.
Because I was here? Is that why you shouldn't have come in?
You're wrong, Mary. Everything you're thinking is wrong.
John would come to the hospital only once a day.
But he was working.
Some days he wouldn't come at all.
Mary, you know he has to go out of town on business once in a while.
I knew many things. I would lie in my hospital bed and the shadows would whisper to me. They would say, "Where is John now? While you lie in an antiseptic bed in a hospital room that is as cold as a surgeon's knife, cutting your memories to pieces."
You frightened me.
Don't go. John will be back in a moment.
I have a headache. I've got to go.
But what will John say when you're not here?
You poor darling. You poor sick Mary.
Yes, walk out on me, Virginia. Leave me alone. But I'm not alone as I was in the hospital. I'm home now, my home. And I'm near you. Near enough to kill you. If only I could think of how to do it.
That robot's quite a guy, isn't it?
He looks something like the Tin Woodman of Oz I used to read about.
Well, I doubt so that he can do any of the things they said on that program. Well, my guess is we'll have to sell him for junk or give him away to some kids. Well, let's see. The directions say, turn on the racket switch for power, and then just talk into the microphone. Use simple phrases and precise instructions. Well, what shall I tell him to do? He's your boyfriend.
Tell him to move the green chair about 2 feet back in the corner.
Okay. Move green chair back 2 feet into corner.
John, he's walking.
That's the darndest thing I ever saw. Well, he did it. He's going to be all right.
John, does he have a name?
A name? Don't be silly.
He must have a name. He's almost like a person. Ask him.
Who does he talk to? What is your name? Your name? Do you have a name? I see. You can't talk.
Don't ask him a question. Tell him to tell you. Do as the directions say.
Tell me your name.
Experimental Robot 23.
Robot 23.
Kind of gives me the creeps.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Well, now what I do? He can't stand there staring at us. There's nothing for him to do around here.
The poker, that steel poker in the fireplace.
Well, what about it?
He looks so strong. Tell him to bend it.
Bend it? Oh, Mary, that's solid steel. He's just a tin toy with electronic nerve.
Please, John, tell him.
But, honey, he'll probably get a short circuit or something, straining himself. Then we will have to junk him. Oh, all right, all right. Bend poker there. Bend steel poker. I see, just picked it up. But nothing's happening. Bend it. Bend it. You see, I told... Good Lord.
Are you bending the steel as if it were taffy?
And did you see that? Why, it's almost as if... As if he threw it down, disdaining of showing off.
Why did you turn him off?
He's dangerous, Mary. Dangerous and frightening. I'm going to dismantle...
No!
Now, wait, don't get so excited about it. You know what the doctor said.
Don't dismantle him, John, please.
All right, all right, all right, all right. You insist. Remember, Mary, you're not to give him any orders, except when I'm home.
Darling, I wouldn't do anything that wouldn't be right for me. Almost 4 hours until John comes home. Lock the door. And now to make him come to life again. Speak to me. Say to me, hello, Mary.
Hello, Mary.
Hello, Robert 23. How nice of you to visit me. Every day you visit me. Why do you do that, tell me? Because I love you.
Because I love you.
Because you love me. Oh, Robert 23, how handsome and strong you are. And you are mine. You do what I want you to do. You are my slave. Say to me, I am your slave.
I am your slave.
That vase that Virginia gave me last year, there, the blue one. Destroy that vase. Thank you, Robert 23, very much. Of all the things in the world I have, you are the most wonderful. Because you love me and obey me and would do anything for me. Anything. Oh, the door, someone there. It can't be John. It's much too early for John. I'll see who it is and you will wait for me. Wait, as you always do. You.
Hello, Mary. I'm sorry to disturb you.
What do you want? This package was delivered to my door.
Something you probably ordered by phone. It's marked 5D, but your name's on it. Should have said 5B.
Yes, from the grocery.
Oh, is that the mechanical man standing in the living room?
That is Robert 23.
Does he really work? He's awfully big and clumsy looking.
He's come to visit me. He's mine. He doesn't love you. Doesn't love...
Of course not, Mary. Of course not. I'm sorry to have disturbed you. Is there anything I can do for you?
No, nothing. Go away. You saw her, didn't you? Say yes. I saw her.
Yes, I saw her.
She's the one I hate. And John, John is the one I love. And you, you love me. Say, I love you.
I love you.
You must destroy her the way we destroyed the bays. Now that you've seen her, you know my secret. And you will kill her for me because you are my slave. Say, I will kill her.
I will kill her.
Virginia, this is a pleasant surprise. Why are you calling me?
It's about Mary.
Mary? Has something happened? What is it?
I rang your doorbell a few minutes ago. One of Mary's packages had been delivered to me by mistake. She came to the door.
Yes?
She acted very strangely, particularly when I asked about the mechanical man, the robot.
Well, what do you mean, Virginia, strangely?
She wouldn't let me come in and look at him. She said he didn't love me.
What?
She was in a strange... Well, a strange mental state. John, are you sure she's all right?
Virginia, listen, the robot wasn't moving or doing anything, was it?
Not that I could notice. But Mary's attitude and her odd remarks...
I knew I shouldn't have accepted that tin monster. Well, I'll get home as soon as I can, Virginia. Thanks for calling. Dr. Rosenblatt, this is John Hanold.
Oh, yes, Mr. Hanold.
A neighbor just called me. Mary's acting strangely. I'm worried.
I don't understand, Mr. Hanold.
Well, we won some prizes on a TV show a few days ago, and one of them was a mechanical man, a robot.
Oh, yes, you told me about it.
Well, the robot, in my opinion, is a dangerous gadget. Well, anyway, one of the neighbors reported that Mary is talking strangely about it. I wonder if you could meet me at the apartment. It'll take me about half an hour to get there.
Mr. Hanold, I hope you'll forgive me, but you've got to expect that neighbors with all the goodwill in the world tend to exaggerate the actions of the people whom they've known to have been mentally ill. I'm sure there's nothing to be alarmed about.
Yes, but, Doctor, this neighbor is a good friend and an intelligent woman.
Well, I've had a lot of experience in these matters, Mr. Hanold. However, to ease your mind, I'll try to drop over sometime this evening or in the morning. We'll have a talk about it. I'm in a meeting now.
Well, all right, Doctor. If you say so. Thanks very much.
Hello?
Oh, Virginia, this is John.
Yes, John.
I just spoke to the doctor. He thinks there's nothing to worry about, but... Well, I wonder if you'd do me a great favor.
Of course, John. What is it?
I've got a few things here to clean up at the desk, so I can't get home right away. I wonder if you'd go in and stay with Mary until I get there.
But, John, Frankly, I'm a little frightened.
Why, that's silly, Virginia. After all, what can happen?
Again, the door. Wait, Robert 23, and I'll come back to you. Say, I will wait for you.
I will wait for you.
Thank you. Thank you, darling. Mary, I wonder if I could visit with you for a while.
Why? Why do you want to visit with me?
Why, darling, I'm your neighbor. And I thought it would be very nice if we had tea. Don't you want me to come in, Mary?
Yes. Yes, I do want you to come in. Come in and meet Robert 23.
Mary, he's moved since I saw him last. He was standing by the fireplace when I was at the door before. And now he's by the sofa. Oh, darling, that lovely vase I gave you and John, it's broken. Broken in a... million pieces.
I had him do it. He did it.
He did it. What do you mean?
You know what I mean. You and your lies and your deceit.
Mary, what are you doing?
Why are you picking up that microphone?
Robert 23 loves me as I love John. And he won't destroy my love. He won't. Robert 23, don't you hurt. Kill her. Kill her.
Mary. Mary.
No. No.
Virginia, please, please stop crying. Good heavens, what happened?
Mary.
Excuse me, Mr. Hanover, but I think I can tell you what happened. I'm Professor Strager, one of the men who built that robot. I came to your apartment hoping to persuade you to return the robot. I heard a dreadful commotion inside. Called this patrolman in the corner, and we forced our way in here. The robot was moving towards this young lady here.
I tried to get away. Wherever I went, it came after me.
I cut off the control box and stopped the robot.
Mary wanted to kill me, John. Kill me.
Doctor, how's Mary? Is she all right?
I've given her sedatives, Mr. Arnold. I'll take her back to the hospital in a few hours. All this excitement. However, I'm sure she'll be all right in another month or two.
But she tried to kill me. She tried to kill me.
For some reason, she was jealous of you. But now that we know her obsession, we can treat it psychiatrically.
And she'll be all right, Doctor. She won't try to kill again. And I think what might have happened to Virginia...
Mr. Hanold, nothing would have happened.
You see, your wife told the robot to kill, but that was not an instruction the robot could carry out.
What do you mean, Professor? You said yourself the robot was going toward Virginia.
Yes, of course, because your wife said go to her. A simple physical action the robot is capable of performing due to its directional mechanism. However, the command kill is not sufficiently explicit. The robot cannot kill in general. It must have step-by-step instructions as to how the command is to be carried out. You see, Mr. Hanel, I might put it this way. To strike out blindly, to kill without thinking, requires an emotional drive, the capacity to hate. And that the robot cannot do. It is, after all, a machine, not a human being.
Game shows have always been a part of broadcasting, and then that's the way it was on radio, too. We're going to go back and listen to an episode of Information, Please. The guest here is Fred Allen, and this is from the year 1940.
It's half past eight.
It's half past eight, New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike presents Information, Please. It'll be the same show you've always heard and liked, but we hope even a little better. You know how we run this weekly quiz. You send us the questions, we provide the experts to answer them. Now, listen carefully, for from this evening on, we're changing the rules a little in your favor. For every question we use, Lucky Strike pays $10, plus, ladies and gentlemen, a copy of the 1941 edition of the new Information Please quiz book just published. And keep listening, because if your question stumps our experts, you get $25 more. 25, mark that well. And in addition, a complete 24-volume set of the current Encyclopedia Britannica. If we gave away any more than that, we'd put Santa Claus out of business. Send your questions to Information, Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. Now, sometimes our editorial staff may fix up or edit your questions a little. Nothing to worry about. In case of duplication, Information, Please uses the question received first, and all questions become its property. Another thing, all questions we've received up to now will also be honored for use in the future and will be awarded the new prizes. And I'll light up a lucky strike because it's time for that Simon Legree of Information, Please, that literary critic of the New Yorker magazine, the man who pops the question every week, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, well, we have a new sponsor, Lucky Strike Cigarettes, to whom all hail, a handshake, and here's good luck to all of us. We're the same old, unrehearsed, absolutely spontaneous, guaranteed ad-lib program some of you have been listening to for some time. And ladies and gentlemen, the board of experts, the regular experts, I mean, that board is familiar to you also. The irrepressible composer, pianist, author, motion picture actor, Oscar Levant. the sports expert, bird lover, poetry quota, and anything and everything recaller, John Kieran. The verse writer and conductor of the New York Post's Conning Tower, the unique and only Franklin P. Adams, whose birthday, by the way, is today. Attaboy Adams. And our guest tonight is a man who is one of the brightest jewels in radio's crown, the inimitable humorist and airwaves philosopher, Fred Allen, working tonight without Portland Hopper and without Kenny Baker to help him.
Without answers, too.
Well, you watch. This evening, he appears for us through the courtesy of Texaco. Now, remember the new awards. For each question missed, Lucky Strike rings up $25, which is paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Well, here we go on our first broadcast for good old Lucky Strike. And here comes a question from Neil Beaton of Beverly Hills, California. Now, if the authors of the following lines had been writers of popular song lyrics, how would they have put it? For example, you perhaps know the line of poetry, "I'm monarch of all I survey." If a modern songwriter were to put that in other words, Mr. Levant, what would he say?
King for a day.
That would be good, or "I'm sitting on top of the world."
But I was thinking about king for a day. Why only for a day? So I'm wrong.
I don't know. It's kind of economical.
Well, kings these days... Oh, excuse me.
Are kind of short-lived, you think. Well, that was just to give you the idea. Now, here's the first line, translated into modern lyric language. "A jug of wine, a loaf of bread, and thou." What would a modern songwriter say? How would he put that? Mr. Levant.
"A cup of coffee, a sandwich, and you."
That's perfect, I think. Very good. "Cup of coffee, a sandwich, and you." "A maid whom there was none to praise and very few to love." Mr. Kieran.
"All alone by the telephone" might be one. All alone.
All alone. All alone would be a good one. Mr. Levant, have another?
"I'm nobody's baby."
"Our nobody's baby" might be even more accurate. And third, "Helen, thy beauty is to me." That perhaps is not so easy. How would
Well, finish it.
That's all I'm going to give you. Mr. Kieran.
"Your great, big, beautiful doll."
I think I'll take it. I was thinking perhaps of "By Mirbus Duchesne." That one might be even more accurate. Well, that gives us 3 out of 3. You get the idea of this game, Mr. Allen?
Only the idea up to now.
Well, now you watch. Gets easier and easier from this point.
I hope so.
All right, now watch. For example, L. Marion of Boston, Massachusetts, sends this one in. We have to get 2 out of 3 on this. You're going to hear a number of sounds, 3 of them. What type of votable action is suggested by each sound? Let's have the first. Wow, Mr. Allen.
An acrobat doing a flip-flop.
Yes, that would be a very good one. Let's have the second. Mr. Levant?
Somebody got too near the backdrop and was smacked from behind.
Would that be right, Mr. Allen?
Well, it could be, or it could be a shot off stage. An effect like similar to that has been used as a shot off stage before radio was invented.
I didn't know that. I think either...
Well, Mr. Levant is right. It was more often used because the level in vaudeville was about where he suggests that this was applied.
You people trying to say a slapstick?
Yes, that's
slapstick. Sure,
the
that's
hard
the
way.
Let's have the third of these sound effects.
Oh, that's
it?
The
Mr. Allen?
I keep forgetting to raise my hand. Is it all right?
Yes, I've got you. That's it.
That would denote the comedian in the burlesque show or some of the smaller houses stooping over and ripping his trousers.
Yes, that's very elegantly put. Thank you.
And turning around and intimating that air conditioning had been invented, which it hadn't up to that time.
Mr. Allen, if I said alley-oop, what would that mean to you as an old vaudevillian?
That would mean that the understander in the acrobatic act was ready to throw the other gentleman who put his approached him and put his hand in the other fellow's other hands, and he threw him for a somersault.
Yes. You know, the radio audience can't see what you're doing with your hands, Mr. Allen, but
well,
I'm
rehearsing
it
for television. I'm looking ahead of this industry. I'm prepared if it comes.
What a perspective opens out before you, Mr. Allen. Now, here's another
trouble
question.
You're going to have with this cast when television comes.
You're no Lombard yourself, Allen.
Only at this table would I stand out, Mr. Adams.
We've got a beautician working on Adams now, Mr.
Touché.
Allen. Mr. Levant.
He's conceited as well as repulsive.
It's hard to combine the two. I mean, I just don't specialize.
You'll find the boys on our show very nice this way, Mr.
It's an awful risk, Mr. Fadiman, putting me on with a new sponsor, trying us both out the first
time. Oh, they don't mind. Now, the next question, gentlemen, which comes from Daniel Sephir of Chicago. Now, this question consists of two parts. I'll give you the first part first. What do you consider the most overworked rhyme in verse? Mr. Kieran.
Moon and June.
Moon and June. Good enough. Now, you haven't finished, Mr. Kieran. Can you cite or quote two passages from songs or poems which use that rhyme that you've selected? If you
can't... I don't sing that kind of song.
I bet Mr. Levant does.
Give me a June moon.
Well, is that a...
I thought I better not sing in the middle of while I was singing.
Well, can you give me two lines?
June moon. June, what did I say? Give me a June moon. That's in one line.
You did it in one. I see. A rhyme in one.
It's called June Moon.
Good enough. That would do. Can you think of any other with June and Moon? Have to get two of them. Two passages.
Da-da-da-da-da, June, da-da-da-da-da, Moon.
Oh, now, you're trying to intimidate me. Well, how about give me a June night, the moonlight, and you?
That was what I was thinking of.
I bet you were, Mr. Levant. Think of any others. Got to get two. Well, how about... beg pardon, Mr.
You wouldn't take the sun in another month, I mean, if we could get a rhyme.
I'd like to switch in your favor, but Mr. Kieran, having selected June and Moon, we've got to stick to it. There's honeymoon, keep a shining in June. There's I stand at your gate and the song that I sing is of moonlight. I stand and I wait for the touch of your hand in the June night.
What songs are those? I mean, those are the new songs that are coming in.
We just made them up. Well, I'm afraid that Lucky Strike is going to lose $25 to Mr. Daniel Sephir plus an Encyclopedia Britannica.
$25.
$25.
You can make more money on the outside, Alan.
I can make more money home writing in questions.
Here's one from M. Ryan of Detroit, Michigan. Name the 10 states that voted Republican during the last election. Now, you can all work together on this. Mr. Levant had his hand up first. Let's have as many as you can give us, Mr.
Levant.
I'll
give them all.
Can you really?
Yeah.
Let's have it.
Maine, Vermont.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Maine, Vermont. That's right.
We'll go westward now.
All right.
Indiana.
Yeah.
Michigan.
Yeah.
Iowa.
Yeah.
The two Dakotas.
All right. North and South.
Naturally.
Good.
And I don't know if West Dakota yet. Iowa.
I said Iowa.
Nebraska.
Don't stutter.
I'm sorry. Nebraska and Kansas.
Yes. That gives us nine.
Nine, huh?
And one more.
Nine, yeah.
Michigan.
Well, I said Michigan.
Michigan was said.
Uh-huh.
Mr. Allen.
Well, let's have some help.
Yeah, let's have some help. I think Mr. Levant has done remarkably well.
Mr. Utah?
Allen.
No.
That loses the $25, Mr. Allen.
That was the purpose of it.
Oh, you know Mr. Ryan of Detroit, Michigan, do you?
I hope to after tonight.
Splitting. I'll have him send 12 of those volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica to you. And now there's one more, and the odd one is Colorado.
That's right.
That would make 10. Well, that sends $25 and a set of the encyclopedia, courtesy of Lucky Strike, to Mr. Ryan, and sends us, in turn, on to the next question from R. Sloan of Kansas City. Can you tell who was responsible for the original of each of these famous witticisms? Get two out of three if you can. Here's the first witticism. Quote, "It's difference of opinion that makes horse races," close quote. Who said that? It's difference of opinion that makes horse races.
A racetrack tout.
Well, you're traducing the author of this quotation.
I don't think so. I think it probably was a statesman.
No, it wasn't.
Was it an author?
Yes, it was.
It's kind of Mark Twainish, but I don't know who said it.
Mark Twain.
That's right.
That causes resemblance.
Mark Twain is right, but I think you got it on the third try.
Well, nobody mentioned any names.
That's true. By gollys, you've got me there.
Well, it's...
What a mind you have, Mr. Levant.
I traduced you, that's all.
Art, that's correct. Mark Twain, and you'll find it in Puddenhead Wilson. I think it's one of those little sayings that come at the heads of the chapters. It's difference of opinion that makes horse races. Quote, "It's so hot, I'd like to take off my flesh and sit around in my bones," close quote. Mr. Allen.
Sidney Smith said that.
Who was Sidney Smith?
Sidney Smith was a famous, do you want to add?
No, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Mr. Levant put a crack in of his own, one of the first cracks I've ever heard on the air that didn't have words to go with it. But Sidney Smith was an English clergyman years ago who was very witty and wrote any number of brilliant lines of the same sort in his time.
Have you ever used any of them, Mr.?
I used that particular one. I had quite a discussion with Mr. Webster some years ago. He claimed...
Noah?
No.
H.T.?
No, I came in the next generation. H.T. Webster. The cartoonist, he claimed that when we were in the little show some years ago, he claimed that many of the Broadway comedians were acting the ghoul and going around, and while not digging up the authors of things, were digging up their pet phrases and works to employ in the Broadway shows. And he claimed that that particular expression had been taken from Mark Twain, we had to take it up with him, Mr. Hellinger and I, in those days, and advise him that Mr. Sidney Smith had said that many years ago.
That's quite right.
As a matter of fact, Mark Twain was only 10 years old when Sidney Smith died, so he couldn't possibly have plagiarized it at that early age.
You don't punctuate your sentences, Mr.
I don't bother with it, not in radio. Just keep going.
Mr. Allen, of course, is quite right. It's from Sidney Smith, from Lady Holland's memoirs. Now, here's the third and last. An empty cab drew up in front of the studio, and out stepped Jack Benny. Mr. Allen's got his hand over his eyes.
And my other hand's up.
Mr. Allen.
Well, that was written, I believe, by Eugene Field when he worked on the Denver Tribune many years ago.
Not in that form, surely.
No, not that Jack Benny stepped out. Although, from his appearance, he might have stepped out at that time. He looks old enough to have stepped out of King Tut's affair there. But he used it. He was a great friend of Modjeska's, and apparently Mr. Field in his day didn't enthuse over Miss Bernhardt's performance when she toured the country.
I see.
I imagine Mr. Adams would know more about it.
Save a lot of letters coming in. It was Sarah Bernhardt.
It was Sarah Bernhardt, not Modjeska. That's quite right.
Who drove up to the cab.
Who stepped out of the cab.
Out of the empty cab at the Tabor Opera House in Denver, Colorado.
That gives us the complete story and also gives a 3 out of 3. You have your hand up, Mr. Levant?
Well, I think it'd be belated to have anything up now.
Is Levant still with us?
Is the audience still up?
Oh, yes, they're right with us. Now, ladies and gentlemen, here's our old friend, Mr. Milton Cross. Now, you know, of course, that our program has changed sponsors. And during the past week, Mr. Cross has been visiting his new sponsor. He's been all through the Lucky Strike factory in Richmond, Virginia, and then he went to some nearby tobacco auctions. And now, for his first commercial announcement, Mr. Cross tells me he has a bone to pick with us.
It's that old, old bone of contention, the claim made by all cigarette companies that they buy the best tobacco. But instead of making claims, I just want to give you a few facts and figures. The first fact is simply this, that the American Tobacco Company, maker of Lucky Strike cigarettes, consistently pays higher prices to get the finer, naturally milder tobaccos. Here's an example. At the auctions, which have taken place this season at South Hill, Virginia, where I visited last Tuesday, American Tobacco paid 37% more per pound for the tobacco it bought for its cigarettes and other tobacco products. Yes, 37% more than the average market price of all types of tobacco sold, and the best will go to Lucky's. Now, this very considerable price difference may be a surprise to you, but it isn't to tobacco men. Year after year, they see Lucky's buy the finer, milder leaf and pay the price to get it. That's why the independent tobacco experts who aren't connected with any cigarette company smoke Lucky's by such an overwhelming majority, more than 2 to 1, in fact. Mr. Fadiman, does what I've been saying contain any hint for smokers?
I think it does, Mr. Cross, and I timed you at just 59 seconds. And now we'll go on with the second half of the program with a question from Constance McGavin of Highland, Indiana. Get 2 out of 3 on this if you can. Now, if somebody told you that he'd meet you at the following times, when would you expect to meet him? Suppose he said, I'll meet you at the Greek Calends. Mr. Kieran.
Never.
How do you make that out?
There are no Greek Calends. That's a Latin, a Roman, and a calendar.
That's right. What are the Calends or Calends? Which are they, by the way? I'll split the difference and call him Collins.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I've forgotten just which part of the month
Well, it's the first of the
first
month.
First.
Yes, the first of the month, as Mr. Adams said. So the Greek Collins didn't exist. That would mean he would never meet you. Now, suppose he said he'd meet you on the way to the Darktown Strutters Ball. About what time would that be? Mr. Levant.
It'll be 8:30 tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night? Yes, of course.
All that fuss, and it's only tomorrow night. I'll be down in a taxi to meet you, honey. Be there 8:30 or more.
Be down to get you in the taxi, honey.
Well,
you better be ready about 8:30.
Finish it.
If he met her in the taxi, it would imply they weren't going anyplace, but if he went to get her in the taxi, they might be going on from there, from the point at which he...
You know, Mr. Allen, you'd be a hard person to have around permanently.
I don't think there's any fear of that after tonight, Mr.
Oh, no, you're doing very well.
I think it's wonderful. There's no work.
No work for anybody.
I mean, you didn't let me finish my other question.
That's dandy.
Now, wait a minute.
Don't fight, boys. Don't fight, boys. There's plenty of time for that after 9 o'clock. Now, if... When Persephone returns to her husband, when would you expect that to be? When Persephone returns to her husband, Mr. Kieran?
Spring.
Returns to her husband?
Oh, no, fall.
Fall.
Early, the setting in of winter.
What's the story?
She was taken, she is the daughter of Ceres, the goddess of the earth, and she was taken below by Pluto and married to the king of the underworld, and when she retires... that becomes winter, and then when she comes out again, that's spring.
That's exactly right, Mr. Kieran. Thank you. That gives us 3 out of 3. Now, how about this one? This comes from R. Brown of Seattle, Washington. Name 4 women troublemakers of literature. Name 4 women troublemakers of literature. Might be easier to name 4 that didn't make trouble. Mr. Kieran.
Becky Sharp.
Becky Sharp is one. Certainly a troublemaker. Mr. Levant.
The girl in Gone with the Wind.
Yes, what was her name? It just escapes you, doesn't it?
Scarlett O'Hara.
Scarlett O'Hara was a troublemaker. That gives us 2 troublemakers. Don't be gallant, gentlemen. Up with your hands. Mr. Adams.
You wouldn't call Xantippe literature, would you? Or fiction?
No. I don't know. I think I'd include Xantippe. That's quite all right.
She made plenty.
Yes, for whom?
Socrates.
Poor old Sock. That's right. Gives us 3. Mr. Kieran.
Pandora.
Pandora certainly made a lot of trouble for everybody, according to the old myth. All our troubles come from her. Mr. Levant.
How about Helen?
Right.
Yes, Helen of Troy made plenty of trouble for lots of people. You get the idea of this, Mr. Allen?
Yes, I do, but I wouldn't speak ill of a lady, even in literature. That's why I kept my hand down, Mr. Fadden.
You see, the rest of the staff is not trained to the Allen gallantry. Yes.
Gallantry combined with a jigger of ignorance that's really caused me to keep my hand.
Did you ever try floating a little whipped cream on the top? That's good, too. J. Speck of Philadelphia sends this one in. This is a musical question. Get 2 out of 3. You're going to hear 3 cadenzas, one after the other, which is our ordinary custom, and they're taken from famous compositions. Can you identify them? Let's have the first.
Go ahead. Very good.
Not enough for you, Mr. Levant?
That's right. That's right. Mr. Adams
Mr.
Has
Adams,
it.
Have you got it?
Paderewski Minuet.
That's right.
Absolutely. 100% correct. That's right, isn't it, Mr. Levant?
Well, naturally it's right, but Mr. Kahn played it brilliantly. Ask him.
He did play it very well. Now, let's have a second of these cadenzas. Perhaps you can do as well for us. A little harder?
No.
Mr. Levant?
He's in good form. That's the last movement of the Moonlight Sonata.
Yes, that's the last movement of the Moonlight Sonata. Bum, 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 bum. You thought one was enough for you, Mr. Adams, eh? Let's have the third and last.
Mr. Kieran ought to get that.
Yes, I think he ought.
Should
I think
it's
one of Mr. Kieran's favorite compositions. Mr. Levant?
I'll tell him. The composer is Chopin. And it's a waltz. Which one?
C-sharp minor?
No, the minute waltz.
Oh. The minute waltz. That gives us 3 out of 3, with Mr. Levant supplying 2 and Mr. Adams supplying 1. They're in very good form this evening. What can you do with this one? Comes from S. Morton of Cincinnati. This is about detectives. Get 2 out of 3 on this. What detective resents going to the scene of the crime? What detective resents going to the scene of the crime?
Any detective?
This is a specific detective in a modern detective story series. Mr. Kieran.
I think Nero Wolfe.
Nero Wolfe in Rex Stout's famous Nero Wolfe series. Why does he resent
that? Well, he was pretty stout and he liked cool bottled beer, and he just couldn't be bothered. He'd rather think it out.
That is the answer. Exactly. Now, what detective always turns up at the scene of a crime during his travels in all parts of the world? Mr. Kieran again.
Well, for one, Father Brown used to turn up. Gilbert Chesterton's Innocence of Father Brown.
Well, isn't the scene of the Father Brown series mainly England, I think?
Well,
I believe so. Mr. Adams?
I think it's that Belgian detective, but I don't know his name.
Hercule Poirot?
Yes.
No. Mr. Levant?
Is Charlie Chandler a detective? Is he registered?
Yes, that's right. That's right.
He's been all over in about 13 pictures.
That's right. He's traveled from coast to coast. Charlie Chan is the one. The Earl Derbigger series. Charlie Chan's always traveling around whenever he happens to stop. A crime seems to have just occurred. I'm afraid we have to count that wrong. Now, we have to get the next right, the first crack out of the box. what detective only goes to the scene of the crime on Wednesday nights? Mr. Adams.
Sherlock Holmes.
How do you make that out?
I think that's the night he's on the air.
No, he's on Sundays and Tuesdays.
You listen to Mr. Allen. He's on Sundays and Tuesdays.
He's on Sundays with Basil Rathbone, and then in a certain wax form, he appears again Tuesday nights, I believe, for the East.
What is
the
correct answer?
Cheaper than sending Mr. Rathbone on. They make a little record and send the record back.
Any idea of the proper answer, Mr. Allen? What detective goes to the scene of the crime only on Wednesday nights?
On Wednesday nights.
I wonder who that could be.
Our sponsor.
Oh, no. The answer is, Mr. Allen, are you possibly too modest, or possibly you're just rattled?
Oh, one long pan.
That's right.
Sure.
One long pan.
One long bungle, a detective. We have so many detectives.
But everyone remembers that.
Not
one.
Enough.
The famous impersonation that Mr. Fred Allen gives us all too rarely, but only on Wednesday nights. I have to count that wrong, Mr. Adams, for you came in a little too quickly on that.
Now I'll
send $25, courtesy of Lucky Strike, to Mr. Morton, and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now, what can you do with this one? From J. Loreen Hunsberger of Dowagiac, Michigan.
Dowagiac.
I beg your pardon, Dowagiac. Have you been there, Mr. Adams?
I've been there.
All right, I thought you were just
guessing. There's a bait named after it.
A what?
A fishing bait.
A fishing bait named after it.
Yes.
Oh, the things that come up on this program are enough to throw me. Here are the names, gentlemen, of several foods, each of which has another meaning which has nothing to do with the original meaning. What are they? Get two out of three. The first is butter and eggs. Mr. Kieran.
Butter and eggs is a very common flour, linaria, I think, something like that. It's a yellow and white flour.
Yes. What is the Latin linaria?
I think it's linaria.
Don't ask me. I wouldn't know. Linaria sounds all right to me, doesn't it to you, Mr. Allen?
Yes, it certainly does.
Absolutely. turkey. That's the name of a food. It has another meaning. Turkey. Mr. Levant.
Oh, a flop show.
Yeah, foul play.
Oh, what?
That's very
foul
good.
Very good, Mr. Allen. Yes, that's very good. That's very good.
I was in enough of them to know. I was known as stuffing around here for 2 years.
Well, you're the wishbone
you
on our
what?
Program, Mr. Allen. Now, the third and last of these foods, cheesecake, has another meaning. Cheesecake, what does it mean? Mr. Allen.
I think that news photographers use that expression referring to ladies' limbs, if I'm...
Yes, but not generally to ladies' limbs. They have to be in a particular position, do they not?
Crossed.
Yes, crossed.
Sitting on the rail of a boat.
Very well put.
An awful lot of trouble to bring a boat into town just to do that.
That gives us 3 out of 3. R. Johnson of Nashville, Tennessee, sends this one in. This is a one-part question, gentlemen. Mr. Adams, will you try to contain yourself?
He gets me giggling.
You've certainly made a hit with Mr. Adams, Mr. Allen.
I know. I'm closer to my fun than Mr. Adams, and I'm not laughing at it. Distance lends enchantment.
Now, what can you do with Mr. Johnson's question? Who is the president of the Red Cross? We've all been thinking about the Red Cross during this last week or so. Who's the president of it?
Is it a man?
I won't tell you a single, won't give you a single solitary hint.
That's
Mr.
an
Levant.
Important hint.
Mr. Allen?
Isn't it Mr. Davis?
No, that's wrong.
Wrong?
No. He's one of the heads of the Red Cross, but he is not the president of the Red Cross. The president of the Red Cross is Mr. Franklin D. Roosevelt, because the president of the United States is always the president of the Red Cross by virtue of his office. That will send to Mr. Johnson, courtesy of Lucky Strike, $25. It's a very good question, and I think we all should have known the answer to it. Here's one from Loreen Stone of Chicago. Can you name the presidents who were defeated when running for these public offices? The first is defeated when running for vice president. What president was defeated when running for vice president? Mr. Adams?
Franklin D. Roosevelt.
That's correct. Defeated when running for United States Senator.
What president was?
Yes, well, what president was it? He was defeated when running for United States Senator. Mr. Adams again.
Might be Harding.
No, I don't think it ever was.
He was
Mr.
a senator.
Harding. The answer is Abraham Lincoln, who ran for senator and was defeated. That gives us one wrong. Can you get the last one right? This president was defeated once when running for mayor. When running for mayor? Mr. Adams?
I don't think that was Calvin Coolidge.
Well, that's a fine way of putting it. No, he was once mayor of Northampton,
he was governor,
I believe.
He was mayor of Northampton, yes. But he was mayor.
Yes, but Theodore Roosevelt...
He was defeated
right.
For the school board
that's
in Northampton.
Right. But Theodore Roosevelt once ran for mayor and was defeated.
Mayor of New York?
Mayor of New York. And that sends $25 to Miss Stone of Chicago. Right. Of Lucky Strike. And now, Mr. Cross.
One question I asked the Lucky Strike tobacco buyer during my visit to the auctions the other day was a question I think lots of you would have asked. I simply said, Mr. McGuire, I've seen you pay higher prices to buy certain baskets of tobacco here when baskets right next to them were selling for $10 or $15 less. What makes those more expensive tobaccos worth the money? Well, here's what he told me. They're worth the money because they're milder. In buying tobacco, as in buying most things, you get what you pay for. We want and pay for and get milder tobacco. Lucky Strike continuously analyzes tobacco all during the growing season, finds out where and how much of the finer, naturally milder leaf is going up for sale, and then pays the price to get it. The result? Luckies are made of milder tobaccos and give you a naturally milder cigarette. Now, if, like most of us, you're smoking more today, more than you used to, then mildness is more important to you than ever before. So next time you buy cigarettes, take a tip from the experts. Ask for Lucky Strike.
Thanks, Mr. Cross. And Lucky Strike announces a loss of $125 in 5 Encyclopedia Britannicas.
My fault. You keep me on here, I'll bring back prosperity.
I'll bet you can. Well, Mr. Fred Allen, Lucky Strike thanks you, and thanks Texaco for lending you to us this evening. Next week, the experts will be Mr. Adams and Mr. Kieran, and our guests will be the well-known music critic and composer, Deems Taylor, and the distinguished warden of Sing Sing, author of Meet the Murderer, Warden Lewis Laws. Remember, for every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $10. If the question stumps us, you not only get 25 more, but the complete set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your letters with questions and answers to Information, Please, 480 Lexington Avenue of this city. And now a parting message from Mr. Speed Riggs, famous tobacco auctioneer of Goldsboro, North Carolina.
And that chant, fully interpreted, ladies and gentlemen, means Luckies pay higher prices for finer, naturally milder tobaccos. With independent tobacco experts, auctioneers, buyers, and warehouse men, with men who know tobacco best, it's Luckies 2-1.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.